You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion of the Ravens' defense and that shellacking of the Washington Commanders in the final preseason game. Joining me to do that is Jake Vogel. Jake, how you doing?
Doing great. How about you, Ken?
Always good. No complaints here. After what a great preseason. I mean, it's easy football to watch. I understand that a lot of people 30 years ago thought baseball was way too slow moving. Yeah, probably even 10 years ago, they may still think it. And it's hard for people like that to be ever good baseball fans and really enjoy, you know, scoring a game and sitting there and whatnot. I find myself getting to be more like that, where I want to fast forward through baseball. Sometimes it's the frustration of this current Oriole team. But I have no problem sitting down for 3 hours watching a football game with the Baltimore Ravens involved, even if it's their twos and threes, and they're beating the living snot out of their opponent.
Same.
All right. Great. So we want to get into some individual performances here. And there were some good ones, particularly on the defense. I feel sorry for the guy who's discussing the offense tomorrow night, but the defense at least had some great performances. You're the guest. Start us off. Who do you want to talk about?
Oh man. So many good ones. Keon Martin, I'll start with him. He, I think, further cemented his status as a member of the 2025 Baltimore Ravens. TFL's a pick six in this game, where he undercut an outbreaking route and just took it to the house from about, I don't know, 25 or so yards away. He just looks like a good player. He comes downhill, gets involved in the screen game, short passes, the running game, outside runs. He is the type of scrappy small corner that we've grown to love in Baltimore, and he's just the next iteration of it. You think of Tavon Young, to some respects, Ladarius Webb, in some ways, Ardarius Washington, all of these kind of smaller size DBs that have playmaking skills, and they show it game after game. I think he could be a really good one, and for sure, it's not going to be immediate, but as an end of the roster guy that's going to develop, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, Corey Ivey from the 2006 Ravens is a guy who certainly he kind of reminds me of. Ivey reminds me of a little more of Lowry, in that he's a shorter, thick guy who was really brought the lumber when he would hit somebody. But Martin, a great game here. I thought he was the standout for the Ravens defense very clearly in this one, in a game where there were several standouts. And in fact, I would say he's probably the MVP of the preseason, or certainly if not the MVP of the preseason, the player who most changed his own stock during this preseason. Aeneas Peebles played well. Mm-hmm. You know, we had, if I'm looking at other players, Chandler Martin, Higgins, there's a number of players who raised their stock very significantly, but I think Martin is the one who did the single most. No, the other guy I would add is JAD. JAD, I'll talk about him next. I'll tell you what, we'll lay off of, but Keon Martin, what a preseason. And he makes the Ravens roster puzzle very difficult. I think there is a slim chance. Okay, there's more than a slim chance. It's probably 30% right now, if I had to handicap it, that he does not make the roster. And I think the reason you would do it is because his size and shape is one that nobody gets really excited about. That said, his play, people ought to get excited about. And there's probably some scout somewhere in the league who's got Keon Martin on a short list of potential corners that their team can pick up. Fortunately, slot corner is not usually the position the teams are missing at this point. Usually it's outside corners. And for that reason, I actually think Marcus Robinson might be in a little more danger of getting claimed than Martin, which is maybe paradoxical, but possibly true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I disagree on who would get claimed faster.
Okay.
But I certainly agree with the size and shape pool and the potential that most teams have their nickel corners. I just think, yes, it's the NFL, but not every front office is created equally. And what I mean by that is there might be front offices that are watching highlights of games. If you just put on the highlight tape of the Ravens games, you're going to see that guy. And he's going to stand out, and then you can go and watch the tape, and really get in to see what this guy's doing, you know, down in and down out. And you're going to be excited to add him. If you're talking about a player that's just looked really good but hasn't made the splash plays, I think that's more the kind of territory that the Ravens could sneak somebody on the practice squad. But I think Keon Martin has done too much in the league to not get picked up.
Boy, that wouldn't look very good if, with all the tools available to NFL teams and whatnot, they can't pick out a Marquise Robinson, at least see he's done well.
Oh yeah. He's looked good, but yeah.
All right. Well, that's it's a valid point. I'll go to the next player. I talked about Jalen Armour Davis. I thought he had another very good game this week, essentially corroborated what he did in week one. He basically sat out sick in week two. He played three plays and he went to the sideline and was kind of doubled over, bent over, as it was described to me by someone who's at the game. And that's not ideal, but he came back and he played very well in this game. He's a completely different player this year. I mean, the guy is finding the football in the air. He's coming back to make plays on the ball. Just the interception he had in this last game, he adjusted to that ball very well in the air, much better than the receiver did. In terms of undercutting as soon as the tip was made. Mm-hmm. He was only targeted a few times during this game. I think he might've given up about 15 total yards on three catches. It's about that. Or it might've been 2 of 3 for 15 yards or something, but it was a very low total of yardage. And he was in for two drives and he had the drive ending. Oh no, he's in for the first half. But he had a drive-ending play on each of the first two drives. The first one is that pass defense on, I guess it might have been 3rd and 2 or 3rd and something. Yeah, 3rd and 2. And then he got the interception on the drive that followed that, which ended the Commanders' drive when they were still, I still want to say Redskins, damn it, when they were really moving the ball.
Yeah, I think JAD looked awesome in this one. He's looked good all preseason. He is the next Ravens outside corner, 4th round pick. Like, that's just sticky in coverage and takes a good while to develop and finally be healthy. And I think he's just the next guy there. I mean, based on what I've seen recently, I think he's really in line to take a step much further than Anthony Averett ever did as a Baltimore Raven. And that's kind of who he reminded me of earlier in his career. just as a corner that's in phase but doesn't get his head around. Right now, JAD is just playing lights out. It's preseason. He's playing against lesser competition, and that definitely matters. But I feel really confident with him being our fifth corner, with Jair Alexander, Chidobe Awuzie ahead of him, and then obviously Humphrey and Wiggins at the top of the depth chart.
All right, so you just laid it all out there and hit my question exactly. What's the percentage chance that Armour Davis sees significant playing time this year because the health of the big four doesn't hold up?
I think it's pretty high. It also depends on your definition of significant.
But, four full games.
Four full games. I'd put it at like
250 snaps.
Maybe like 45%. I was going to say higher, but four games is a little bit tougher to kind of guarantee that he's like starting out there with four guys in front of him. But yeah, I'd say close to 50%.
Okay, I'm going to Delphi this a little bit with you, which means I'm going off your answer. My original answer was going to be 60 or 65%. But then I thought, what's the chance of JAD himself making it through four or five games? You know, it's just not that he hasn't proven that kind of an injury history. So there would be risk entailed in that. So I'll drop myself to 50% that it happens. But I think the chance is very high. He's going to be called on maybe not just once, but regularly during the season because, hey, Awuzie is out this week because he's a little banged up. And then Alexander, you know, hurts his pancreas in the middle of a game. And, you know, I'm joking, of course, with that. But, you know, a lot of things have gone wrong with Jair Alexander over the years would create an opportunity for him.
Yeah.
Your turn.
So I can't go too long without talking about Trenton Simpson. He had a fantastic game. He was all over the field. He tipped the ball for the JAD pick in this game. Mm-hmm. He had good pursuits. Let's see. There was a sack that Simpson was involved in. It was a six-man rush, third and eight. Buchanan was really the guy that got the sack, but Simpson and Peebles were right there, kind of at the tail end of that. He forced a fumble that ended up maybe going down as an interception. With the who caught that? Malik Cam made a great play. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really impressive. Well, first of all, Simpson had the speed in pursuit of the scrambling quarterback to track him down, still, you know, well behind the line of scrimmage, force that ball out, which is something that the Ravens have struggled to do in recent years, not really forcing that many fumbles. And then Ham catching it in the air and never touched the ground so it can go down as an interception, even though it was a fumble, not a pass per se.
It did actually go down as a fumble, by the way. But if they had ruled that his hand was going forward,
it wouldn't have mattered.
It would have been
That's why the play was so great. It's like, I don't care if it's a fumble or if it's an interception. It's the Ravens ball. Like we know it's the Ravens ball. And that was great about that play. But yeah, I think he's really come on this preseason and kind of solidified himself as, you know, the second linebacker or the weak side backer next to Roquan. That's really good. He has played a lot of snaps, which is not always the best tell in preseason, but I think they just want to get him reps and get him experience out there and see what he looks like playing next to some other young inside linebackers. And I thought, you know, he passed the test for sure, making splash plays and, you know, doing some good things in the run game, not necessarily having to do too much in coverage yet.
So they had a couple choices in terms of keeping him on the field. And that is the one thing I was a little bit down on, was that they left him in for a whole half of football. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're going to clearly be depending on him, there's no doubt about it. You said it exactly, but you know, removed any doubt that he will be the starting weak side linebacker come week one. I don't know what the Ravens are going to do as far as third down goes, whether he's going to be off the field on third down so they bring in a dime or You know, that's the special Kyle Hamilton package that they have, or the, you know, they just don't entirely trust Simpson, or maybe they split the duty and they decide he's going to be up for some third downs, but not all. I think he improved his chances in this game just with what he did as a pass rusher. He's got a lot of quickness, a lot of good deception. The cross blitz that they had with Buchanan was what really helped set Teddy up for the initial contact. Mm-hmm. And then Simpson happened to get in on the finish on that one. It's just a lot of really positive factors coming together for Simpson right now. Kind of like JAD, a guy who's turned his career around in three preseason games from where he was. I mean, he's a guy that I don't think I trusted, and I don't think the Ravens trusted, and I don't think a lot of Ravens fans really had a selection made between Buchanan and him going into the season for who ought to be the starting weak side linebacker. Let's transition though to Buchanan, maybe, you know, in this discussion, since we're right here anyway. Didn't have a bad game. I thought he's lost ground to Simpson very clearly during the preseason. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think he had a terrible game here. He wore the green dot, which is nice. Get some experience with that. I think the reason they give the green dot, by the way, to him is that Buchanan will be the one to replace Roquan if anything were to happen. So it's either the order of green dotness that I would see is Roquan is one, Buchanan is two, and if anything happened to either of them, I think it goes to Hamilton. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody but those guys would carry it. I don't think it goes to Simpson. I guess it could go to Higgins if he ended up, you know, further down the line being the Mike at some point. But I would really see Hamilton as being the third guy who would be it.
Oh, I agree with that completely. Yeah, I thought Buchanan had an overall positive game. Definitely still has some weak spots. Sometimes appears a little bit slow, but can make up for it on other plays. So it's a little bit inconsistent, but he had a pursuit tackle near the sideline.
Yeah, that was great.
On a third down that forced a fourth and one. The Ravens then had the Ojabo unblocked mm-hmm. Tackle for a loss, which was a turnover on downs. Awesome. Let's see. Buchanan had the sack that I mentioned earlier on third and eight. It was a six-man rush, but Buchanan got there. Simpson and Peoples were right there behind him. Let's see if we had another play.
I got one more big one.
I have a negative for him. So the McCaffrey play, Luke McCaffrey, wide receiver, he forced two missed tackles. Keon Martin missed first, and Teddy Buchanan missed second on about a 10-yard or so gain. Mm-hmm. Kamen Rucker and Lowry made the tackle on that. So you know, not good to see him miss tackles, especially after one of his fellow teammates already missed. But, you know, he is a McCaffrey. I don't think Luke is going to be the star player, but he does have a little bit of wiggle to him. You'd like to see him wrap up there and not miss. Let me see if there's anything else that I had on him, because I did kind of chart the whole game. I don't see anything else standing out from later in the game after that point.
All right. Well, the big play that you certainly could charge him with, but the problem was not entirely his, was the 52-yard 10 plus 42 pass to Yankoff, the best name ever. NFL tight end. He had no problem growing up with that name, I'm sure. anyway, it was 10 plus 42 between the numbers and left hash. And originally, Buchanan was closest in zone coverage on that. It was also slightly behind him, I believe, where he caught the football. So it would have been a very difficult play for Buchanan to make, but he's the guy who's got to take that throw away, who's got to close that window. It's something that's very difficult to do. Between level two and level three, it's one of the last things that linebackers learn how to do well. And of course, the guy who really messed up the play was Tampa.
Yeah.
He ran him down, failed to wrap up, instead put a shoulder on him. It wouldn't shock me if Tampa was cut over this. By the way, there's so many defensive players they need to try and get on the roster. Tampa's the sixth corner. The fact that he has 3 years left of team control is probably what's saving him at this point, because I don't think he's played as well, not nearly as well as Martin, for example.
Right.
And I think you could make the claim that Marquise Robinson has a better development path You're talking about a guy who's faster, and Tampa, the speed is an issue. They may have to convert him to safety. But he's been targeted like crazy in this preseason. But anyway, getting back to this particular play, that wasn't Buchanan's fault. That was mostly Tampa. The fact that it got to be 52 yards instead of,
correct,
I guess it was about 18 or so it would have been if Tampa made the tackle.
I did have that play. I just didn't have Buchanan's name on it. I put it as a positive play for Lowry with good pursuit on the big game play. Tampa goes for hit without the wrap up. That was really a bad no-no. He showed some recovery speed. It's not necessarily the kind you want to see, but did get back to the play. I don't know if he was part of the tackle, but he was right there at the end of it. That is against the tight end, but that guy was moving down the field. I don't know how fast he was running, but it was pretty fast. That was a big negative for Tampa on that one. You see it in the NFL a lot, where guys think that they're just gonna, kind of put their shoulder in there and knock the guy over, and it didn't happen at all.
Classic Patrick Queen.
Yeah, you got to wrap up in those situations or knock the ball out. But he didn't do either of those things. He literally just put his shoulder into him. It did nothing but kind of gave him some more momentum downfield, really. Mm-hmm. Tampa did have a couple nice plays.
Go ahead.
I don't want to pick on him too much. He had a nice breakup. Oh, it was a nice and a negative, actually. That was a DPI. So I would credit it as a negative play. But to me, I don't know how much of a DPI it was, but it got called. You're going to get dinged for it. Let's see.
It was completely ticky-tack, in my opinion, too. I thought nice, clean PD.
Yeah.
And very rarely would that be called. We just went through a game in Dallas where the game is called very differently, very loosely for DPI. There were probably four plays worse than that. I might be slightly exaggerating. Maybe it's only two plays worse than that. But there were several plays worse in terms of DPI than that Tampa play in this game.
Right. Let's see. He has anything else? Maybe earlier in the game. I'm not seeing anything later for him.
He had tight coverage of the back shoulder throw that went to Martin. That was the wide receiver, Tay Martin, and took him down right away. It was basically a perfect throw and kept the play in front of him, made the tackle. It wasn't a defensive win. The other thing he did is he had Brooks down that left sideline and forced Hartman to throw the ball out of bounds. So it's always nice when you stay step for step. You don't even always have to be seeing the football. You just have to, throw a shadow of coverage radius that appears dangerous to the quarterback, and he'll throw the ball out of bounds, and he did in that case. All right. Is it my turn? Do you have a player?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Well, let's talk about Marquise Robinson, because I think he's had a really good summer. He's been a preseason star, and this is one of the problems, is he's been playing exclusively with the twos and threes. So it's a little bit hard to get the read on him. Most notably, he's playing against twos and threes and quarterbacks. Now, I'll take a trip down this rabbit hole really quickly. Jonah Schaefer put out a stat that the Ravens had held their opponents to a 49 and change passer rating with zero touchdown passes and five interceptions this summer so far. That's great on the surface, and it is great. There's nothing, no way to spin that into something negative. But the Ravens themselves, as quarterbacks, have had one touchdown and four interceptions, so just almost as bad, with a 59 and change passer rating. So, the moral of the story is backup quarterbacks can look pretty bad during the preseason. And you don't usually have gaudy numbers like you do during the regular season on a regular basis. So Marquise Robinson, within that context, has not had the most difficult opportunity set to capitalize on. But they didn't target him much either. He played the entire second half. And, Washington is needing to come back in the game. They only targeted him one time for 5 yards. He had what I like is when I see an outside corner who doesn't have a fear of hitting to dislodge the ball, I want to see him go for the ball too. But the throw where, Higgins, I believe, had the quarterback hit on Johnson right by the goal line. And Johnson was kind of rolling away from pressure, finally gets hit by Higgins. He lofted the ball up over the head of Cager, the tight end, number 89.
Yeah.
And it's still 2 or 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And Marquise Robinson came in and upended him, much bigger man. And, you know, he takes risk. Of course, Cager took a lot more risk on that hit, but got up and walked away from it. But great play by Robinson on that play. I love to see that kind of value. I hope they can sneak him through to the practice squad. I don't know that it will happen, but they will try.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, Lawrence Cager is a former Georgia Bulldog.
Really?
Yeah, okay. He was a wide receiver. It looks like they're kind of transitioning to him.
Oh, he's tight end.
Tight end. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a very big body.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think we could talk about a number of players still. Ham, I mentioned earlier, looked really good in this game. Let's see what plays. Well, I mentioned the one earlier where Trenton Simpson pursued the quarterback that was escaping, forced the fumble, and Ham intercepted it, basically caught the ball before it hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal. Let's see. He had some more. Ham and Ravenel, really nice run stop to the offensive left for no gain. A good contain, stopping power on the defensive right side. I don't have a mark, like a timestamp on that one. It was after.
Yes.
It was after Loop's kick. So it was maybe in the third quarter or so. I could be wrong. It might have been second, but yeah.
Okay, so I've got him for keeping the right edge, containing the right edge unblocked. Yep. As Rucker and Martin held the left edge. So he collapsed onto the run play that was a takedown of Felton for no gain. But he did have a play earlier in the game you might be talking about. This is a Q2 7-10, so I think this is before Loop's big kick.
It's before the big one for sure.
Okay, so it might have been before. But yeah. He had a 52-yarder was to end the half, right? So it might have been.
Yeah.
This is still the first half.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Okay.
So this play, he was blocked by the left tackle by Fant, George Fant, who they just signed, by the way.
Yes.
But he kept his left arm free.
Yep.
And Nichols went to the inside and he took him down.
That is the play I'm referring to. Yeah, he was the contain man on the right side edge of the defense.
Of the defense.
The left side of the offense. And CJ Ravenel was right there with him, kind of making the play 91. Let's see. Ham, good pressure to force a late throwaway on fourth down. So you would have this one. Sheds a tight end who then releases. So it's kind of like a little chip block. Mm-hmm. And then bench press the right tackle. I believe mm-hmm. he was on the right side. Releases and contains on the edge, kind of pursuing to the defensive left side, the offensive right side, where I think it was Johnson at quarterback at that point. To produce a throwaway. So that was a good one.
Yeah, I think that's on third and six. The timestamp I have that is
Q3,
10:32.
It was definitely third down. It forced a fourth down. So to go to a fourth down. Then Ham had a tackle for a loss on the defensive left side, downhill backside pursuit run play. It was a very minimal loss. I think maybe a yard, but good play on him. Let's see, five-man. This was a great play by a different player, so we'll save it for someone else. But, yeah, I think that's what I had on hand, but he looked really strong in this game.
Hearing you talk about this, I think there's maybe a good show to be had on how you take notes for looking at defense, looking at offense, whatever it is for a ball game. But we have our own method for it. But I'm betting there's some other methods out there that could help us come up with a stronger method still. But I'd love to hear how you do it. I'll just start by saying Maureen keeps all the notes we do, so I can actually read the handwriting afterwards. Mm-hmm. But we keep the far left is a time reference.
Yeah.
Then we have an index column which contains all of the Ravens players who were participants in the play, good or bad. And then we have a notes column. But then if I want to find all the plays for Trenton Simpson, I look for all the 32s in that index column, and I can go back and I can find all those plays to easily put them together in these extended treatment section you'll see in my defensive articles, for example.
Yeah, that's awesome. I haven't done anything that in depth. I normally kind of handwriting down these notes, not putting it in any sort of Excel file or anywhere that I can sort it. So that would be super helpful. But I normally like to do timestamps kind of down in distance and all that. I just didn't quite have the time to to put in those details. And I figured you had it. So I kind of relied on you for the alley-oop on all of these.
All right. So let's see. So I guess we've hit on Ham. Is it your turn or my turn to come up with one more player?
I brought up Ham, so your turn.
Okay. I'll bring up one more. You know, a guy who's not going to be with the Ravens, a guy who made a very big impact in a short time, is Thomas Graham. I mean, consecutive plays in that fourth quarter, beginning with Q4, 737. First of all, they had a stop of Felton for no gain, where he's just collapsing into the backfield to get it. Mm-hmm. And then he undercut Martin in the end zone for the interception. I think it might have been two plays later. So it was on.
Yeah, I agree.
Same series. So he's a guy who they may not even have room for him on the practice squad. I mean, he's their last corner on the roster. He was in pretty much the last guy who came in. He got time at slot on the outside, so which is nice. Then maybe there's room for him. Maybe you can have an extra corner on the practice squad roster. But if they keep Keon Martin, I think they're going to want Marquise Robinson. Maybe they have room for one more corner, and Graham might be it.
Yeah, I think they have room for two on the practice squad. That was it, MJ Devonshire, something like that, that we got from the Panthers. I'm not sure if he's going to be on the practice squad. So perhaps Thomas Graham could make it, you know, making those plays at the end of a preseason game certainly, you know, puts him on some team's radar, but it is at the end of the last preseason game, and probably all of these games are having some sort of turnovers with bad quarterback play and, you know, stronger defensive play.
Let me ask you one thing related to that, because the point has been made, and actually this came from Huddle It Up Films, from Jason Smith, who said that he thinks that the Keon Martin's play is the first time in a very long time he can remember play in the last preseason game that might have changed a roster decision for a player. The last one that I can really think of, that's an obvious one, is Kelly Gregg in the 2001 finale, which, by the way, noon game also against the Giants, you know, one of these weird day games at the end of the preseason. And Kelly Gregg and Dwayne Missouri were locked in that death struggle to make it. And Kelly Gregg ends up being a 10-year Raven after getting an interception, a sack, and he recovered the fumble caused by Dwayne Missouri, his primary competitor's sack, and ran it in for a touchdown. Missouri had two sack fumbles in that game and still lost the competition, the greatest ever final game competition there's ever been. And the difference between the two, Greg ends up going on to be a 10-year Raven on the fringe of the Ravens Ring of Honor. And as soon as the Ravens have any kind of a downspell, by the way, Greg is going to be in, because they're going to add one player per year. They're going to go back to the glory years, and they're going to find him, and they're going to get him in. But you know, on the other side of that, Dwayne Missouri ended up only playing two NFL games and being a star for many years, a two-way star in the Arena League, where he played offense and defensive line. So it's just the twists of fate from that one midday game on a Saturday in 2001 ended up affecting 10 years of the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, there's been a decent amount of those guys, but none that have made quite the same impact as Kelly Gregg, for sure. I could think of running backs years ago, Bobby Rainey, having some big preseason. I think he ended up making the Ravens roster, but if not, he got quickly picked up and was on a team and bounced around and didn't have much of a career. Mizell, another running back. It happens a lot with running backs, but when you were talking about Kelly Gregg, I was thinking about Michael Pierce and his impressive rookie years. Preseason was great. I think we had a feeling prior to the last preseason game that he was going to make the roster just because of how good he looked in camp and everything. But he was another player that just had a phenomenal game or multiple games in the preseason.
Yeah, those are good examples. And, you know, in some cases, we always want it to be a UDFA who's doing this. So Keon Martin is a great example. But Purnell McPhee, he didn't come out of nowhere because he was a fifth round draft pick, but boy, he was talking as if wasn't sure he'd made the team. And John Harbaugh immediately corrected. They interviewed Purnell McPhee after a game where he'd had like his third enormous game-changing play in three games in a four-game preseason. And then they interviewed Harbaugh right after that. First of all, Purnell McPhee said, "No, I'm just trying to make the team right now. I know that's coming up soon." And John Harbaugh immediately was the next person interviewed and said, "Well, he's made the team." I can tell you that right now. Did you think that, obviously right on the pick six, okay, Harbaugh and Orr immediately are talking and yucking it up with each other after the play. Did it look to you like that was more of Harbaugh and Orr saying that defense, they had it figured out right from the start exactly where that ball was going and that quarterback had no real chance. And boy, Keon, that's a great play for him. Or do you think they were really talking about Keon's future? Ain't no way we're cutting him now kind of thing.
I don't know if I got too much of a look at their conversation during that play. I'll have to go back and look and see if I get a feeling one way or another. I hope it's the latter, because that would just be awesome. But even if it's the prior, I mean, that's good that the defense is, well prepared, yeah, and ready for what's about to happen. I could definitely see it going either way. The defense is probably ready for the situation, though. I would probably kind of lean with that.
Yeah, lean with that. I what I'll say is I really loved about it, even if that's what it was, which is the lesser one for Keon Martin, obviously, is that it's very clear that Orr in particular, but I think coaches in general, really like working for Harbaugh. That was a clear, he was treating another coach as his equal in that discussion. They were having a very jovial moment about it. Orr is headed for big things in the NFL. I don't think, there's any question about that. And Harbaugh, is going to support him in that. He doesn't have to be worried about Orr taking his job. In a lot of ways, the Ravens would really love it if Orr took somebody else's job. Uh-huh. And, for the third round draft picks, it would generate. But, there's that jovial nature. I just love seeing it between those two.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's a great sign of things to come. Zach Orr had his early season struggles last year as a DC. But
you ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
The whole defense kind of turned around when they made some changes. And I think he's got his feet wet and he has a great staff working with him. And John Harbaugh, people can say whatever they want about him. They can be down on him year after year for a number of things. But one thing that guy knows how to do is build a coaching staff, and darn, they have one of the best, if not the best, in the league right now. It's hard to compete with Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo. Those are just two guys, and I'm sure they have a talented assistants up there in Kansas City, but man, Baltimore has such a good coaching staff. I'm really excited.
Yeah, They've done a good job with that. The secondary coaches they brought in, everything. I'm thrilled about it. We probably ought to talk about Ruben Lowry before we let it go, because Ruben Lowry had three different times in this game where he cleaned up on somebody else's missed tackle, including the one that saved the touchdown. I think they ended up getting a field goal on that drive.
They did.
Yep. So I know there were other times they were in the red zone where they gave the ball away, but they gave up a field goal on that one. But he assisted on missed tackles from Martin and Buchanan. That's the play you talked about earlier, I think. There's one by Keon initially, then Buchanan. You mentioned that one. He cleaned up a missed tackle from Simpson. Simpson went flying by a player on Brooks. They had the cleanup of the Yankoff Tampa missed tackle. He made one missed tackle of his own, but just love to see a player hustling on the field. This wasn't he didn't have a bunch of coverage highlights in this game, but he did have a really nice game of tackling.
For sure. Yeah, I don't think he had too many notes for me, but like you mentioned, he did clean up a number of things. Didn't have to be special in the game, but I mean, it's kind of it is a safety's job to be the last line of defense.
Yep.
That's quite literally in the job title. Being the safety, but I thought he looked pretty good in this one. I know we're kind of at the tail end of talking about this game. I don't want to get out of it without mentioning Jay Higgins and Chandler Martin, basically back to back or near each other. These two plays happened. There was a 5-man rush, great timing by Jay Higgins, number 49. It was really hard to watch the TV copy before they released the all 22, trying to figure out which linebacker it is, because 48 and 49, when you have the small view and they're talking to a player on the sideline, the Commander's player.
Oh yeah, that sucked.
it was like, all right, which one of them is it? I need to get this right. And I ended up, you know, going back and forth and figuring out that Higgins had a little bit of like black tape near his gloves, and Martin had like all white. Mm-hmm. So that was a visual indicator. It was 49, not 48 on the play that was making the blitz. Anyways, just kind of into the mind of Jake. He blitzed, shed the running back, which was awesome. So the running back did get in there and try to do his best in pass protection. And pressured the quarterback with a quarterback hit and an incompletion. The pass, however, was pretty close to the player being complete, but it was a great play by Higgins.
And that was the play where Marquise Robinson undercut Cager on that play, too. It was a couple yards behind the line of scrimmage. The Felton was the running back on that play, and he got steamrolled by Higgins.
Yeah, Felton's a smaller back. He was drafted by Cleveland years ago, kind of as a receiving back. But, he did not do the best in pass protection there. And then good coverage and the pass breakup, as I mentioned earlier, by Chandler Martin. It was on a third down to force a fourth and 11. I wrote down, he feels like a great practice squad inside linebacker to develop. Like when you see a guy that size playing linebacker that's been in the conversation all of camp and all of preseason with the other undrafted guy, Jay Higgins, and he makes a good play in coverage, you're just like, all right, well, there's potential. Let's see what we can do with him on the practice squad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll love it if one of those two can make the team and really make a big footprint on four units on special teams where they need it big. I think that would be enormous for this team. Hopefully they can make the team without having the sacrifice of Hummel in the process, so they can maybe have both on the team. But it's going to be difficult for them to get that done. They just do not have enough roster spots to go around. And when I look at it, it's going to be a very challenging set of inactives week to week. Now, they'll have a couple of choices each week that'll probably be made for them by injury with a guy who's just not quite ready to go. And they'll have, you know, a ninth and 10th offensive lineman will give you two. maybe a player like a Jabo is available who gives you one each, each week you want to pull the trigger on that. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're going to just deactivate a Jabo for every week, there's no reason to have him on the roster at all. But if you want to get value out of the guy, you've got to have him on the roster some point. And then you talk about players taking players off the field who could really help you on special teams, like TJ Tampa, or if Bo Braid is a fifth safety, taking him off. I mean, just you're mm-hmm. cutting right into the bone of your special teams unit.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
All right. All right. So we have, let's see, you want to do MVPs first and then go to questions? You want to do questions and MVPs? Your call.
I guess let's do questions first.
Okay. And make sure you have your list ready to go then at the end of this, if you don't right now. So here are the questions. We'll give you the first shot at each of these. Now I'm going to butcher the name, but I'm going to try. Dr. Syed Tabatabai said, is this a greatest assortment of UDFA/rookie/inexperienced depth the Ravens have ever had? We've usually had a few potential studs and then some borderline or fringe developmental talent, but this feels a standard deviation above past years in terms of potential.
Yeah, I don't know that you can make a blanket statement like that with all of the talented rosters that the Ravens have had over the course of their history. But certainly you could make a smaller sample size kind of view of things and say that this undrafted pool has a greater potential to land on the 53-man roster or on other 53-man rosters from a pure volume standpoint than probably the past 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. You know, Syed, I'd say one of the things I'd look at is if you go back far enough, the Ravens had some not talented teams at times, particularly if you go back to 2002, say, to 2000 and, you know, even 16 and 14, real building off that horrible 13 season. They had some teams that just weren't all that great. And when you have those sorts of teams or even the next year after some bad years, they tend to have a lot of opportunity created for UDFAs. So while this set could be extremely good, and I think there's, you know, I could name 15, 16 players who I think could possibly step in for an injury this year who are undrafted or very limited in terms of their total experience in the NFL. I think it's less likely to happen this year just because the Ravens are dealing with an extraordinary depth across their entire roster. That's the claim I would make. I'd say that this, mm-hmm. this roster is as deep as any Ravens team I've ever seen in terms of the quality of the last player at every single position group.
I fully agree with that statement.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the next one. Brad McGowan says, last year you were adamant that Humphrey and Ardarius had the best camps and they went on to have terrific years. Who stood out on defense this year in a similar regard? Okay. There have been a few. So first of all, on offense, I think everybody knows, as I said it a bunch of times, Keaton Mitchell has been by far the star of camp. And he probably mm-hmm. has been for either side of the ball. The defense has been much more balanced. Tampa's had some good plays. He's had some bad plays. Lowry's had some good plays. And he's had a few bad plays as well, but he's definitely made some plays. Kane has done some separation to distance himself from the other safeties that I think is good. I think we've seen good play from Higgins. It's harder to tell with defensive linemen exactly how good they're going to be, and that's why Aeneas Peebles is probably the player I'm most surprised by during the preseason games, or one of the ones I'm most surprised by.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of a real single camp stud on defense, I'm not sure there is anybody at the quality of Humphrey or Ardarius Washington, either one of them from last year. They had their hair on fire. It might be Alexander, might be the guy I would say, just for the number of times he's been on the field, which hasn't been consistent all summer. Right. He's been outrageously good.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And I know it's been tough seeing him not at practice, like seeing his name up and Jair's not playing. Yeah, but hopefully he's healthy and, you know, taking care of his body and everything that he needs to be out there and, you know, as of right now, the Ravens have depth to allow him to get to 100% and play other guys and rotate kind of like they did with Jimmy Smith and Marlon Humphrey and Brandon, what was his name?
Carr.
Brandon Carr. Yep. Kind of the rotational four safety deal that the Ravens have done in, you know, multiple years of their history.
Yeah, it's they do have the opportunity, and it does really seem to benefit cornerbacks not to be on the field for 100% of snaps, which very few teams can afford to do that, but this Ravens team can. And they, I mean, that's, you want to find 250 snaps for JAD, get him in a five-man rotation and have him playing 18 snaps a game to start the year. You could easily get there. All right. Jake, this question came from you, but I want to hear your thoughts on this. And I'll ask the question a specific way. How many of the end of roster guys are likely to get traded? So we talked about this very briefly in the first part, but let me just say, if I set the over under on trades at 1.5, would you go over or under based on where the Ravens are right now in terms of ones they're actually able to bring to fruition?
I don't think we've seen it very often, especially recently. However, we have seen in EDC's career as the general manager, his ability to trade some end of roster offensive linemen, some guys that most Ravens fans don't view view in a particularly positive light.
Ben Bredesen, for example.
Exactly. Ben Bredesen. Tyree Phillips.
They didn't get it done.
I don't remember. We did trade Jermaine Illuminor. I think that might have been pre-EDC. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think so too. But that's a good one.
I think it's possible. I would still say it's unlikely, but if it does get done, I think it's only one trade.
Yeah.
So I think you've placed it correctly with 0.5 as your over under. I would lean no, but I certainly think if there is a GM to get it done, it's probably Eric DaCosta or Howie Roseman, but. Howie, honestly, he's kind of more of an acquirer than a seller, but I do think that he's another GM that would be kind of in the weeds of that. Yeah, I'm going to say no. Hey, I'm going to say no.
Okay. You're going to say more likely not. All right. There have been some other guys they traded, by the way. They traded a cornerback who never played. They drafted, and then they traded him for a pick that was one round later.
Sean Wade.
That's it. And they traded Kari Vedvik, getting rid of him at the right time. But they haven't made a trade every year, and they've made very few player-for-player trades. Your needs really got to match up, and I just don't see any position where the Ravens can get a lot of value from somebody else at the end of any position group. I just don't see that happening this year.
My view of the whole premise is that the Ravens are more likely to value their kind of roster bubble guys that in our minds are not roster bubble guys that are going to make the 53 than the draft pick that they could get for those particular players. Yeah. Meaning, I think that they could get some draft capital for a number of players. There's probably like 2-3 players that are possibilities that they could get some sort of, even if it's a conditional 7, they could get something for them. Keon Martin being one of those guys. I think that EDC would rather have that player than trade them away. And I think the players that they will cut instead of him are less likely to be less likely to be valued by teams, you know, enough teams that there's some sort of competing just competition for those guys' services.
Okay. Yeah, I think I agree with that. And, you know, the first risk is claim. The second risk is sign away. And the sign away is what happened with Ben Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And the claim is what's happened with a number of players, but it's usually a size and shape player. One of the guys who nobody's talking about being signed away is Lichtenhand, the tackle. He's going to be cut, but he's very much a size and shape player. And he may be a guy that somebody else says, you know what? We want him at the end of our roster as our fourth tackle, because we don't really have anybody currently. So I you know, I can't make the Ravens. It just doesn't make any sense, but he would be a guy that I think that they would consider a risk to be claimed.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on to the next question. This is B More Sky High. By the way, be talking to him much more because he's being he'll be on a regular show this year. I don't want to give away too much, but we got one coming up with him very soon. Which of the second and third string and beyond do you see most likely to be a starter in the 2026 season? Okay, so we got a lot of guys that probably fit this category, but what player, and I guess we're talking on defense here, who would be your guy?
Second or third string starting next year, huh?
It's starting in 26.
Let's see. Well, corner immediately is an opportunity just based on where the roster sits. Let's see. I mean, Tampa's currently the only guy, and Keon Martin are the only guys that potentially are on the roster next year.
Wiggins.
Wiggins is a starter. After Alexander Awuzie and JAD, you got Tampa and Martin. So corner is an obvious spot that could answer that question. Green. Mike Green's like the no-brainer answer if you consider him a backup, which
I don't.
I mean, right now on paper he is, but I really don't think he's going to be by season end.
Right. How about Buchanan?
Even Adisa Isaac, but his injury history doesn't give you a bunch of hope. Buchanan, possibly. Simpson's in year three. If, you know, he has some struggles, then definitely it's a possibility. Same with the undrafted guys, Higgins or Martin.
I got a nuclear option for you, and boy, we would not like this to be the case, but I think that either Okoye or Jones, if Travis Jones, and that's Jason Jones, if Travis Jones were to leave and Jenkins ages out of his usefulness.
Yep, Okoye is an option. Peebles is a nuclear option as well, if Matabike had an injury or something next year. But yeah, he fits the same position as Nnamdi.
Okay. All right. I think that's some good ones. Appreciate the question, Sean, and thanks for sending that to us. AngeLove85 says, "Hi, Ken. Do you believe as fans we are over-exaggerating the impact of some of our defensive UDFAs and their likelihood of being claimed?" Absolutely. Absolutely. I think most fans way overestimate their own things. I try and think of what percentage there is, and usually I deduct about 10% or cut it in half or do whatever to scale it down. But Voss and I just did that on Friday morning GM. And first of all, we started off with the percentage chance that we each thought, and then we Delphi'd, which means we with knowledge of the other person's answer, we're allowing ourselves to change it to be closer to the other person's answer. And it's a good practice to go through, but I think that we came up with some fairly low percentages. Like Bo Braid, I think we might have had a 10% to be claimed. It's probably not that high, honestly. Dellinger, maybe 15%. Corey Bullock was higher. Corey Bullock, we thought, was between 35 and 50%. I said 35, Voss said 50. But we went through that practice, and I think that's good. The kind of players that get drafted are size and shape players that has no business being put at risk. And the best example I can give you this year would be Carson Vinson. If they would be stupid enough to put him at risk, they're going to lose him almost certainly.
Yeah, 100%. Especially with the tape that he's put out there, like with some flashes here and there, you're talking about. I think there was a little bit more to her question. Which UDFA do you believe can step into a defined role today? Keon Martin playing some nickel. He's got some people in front of him for sure. Kyle Hamilton, Marlon Humphrey. That might be it.
Lowry, but moving into a back end role, I could easily see that.
Yes.
Yeah. How about Higgins if something happened, needing him at inside linebacker?
Yep.
Yeah. I could see that, and I could honestly, I think I could probably see someone on the DL, like if Jenkins are injured, Okoye or Jones being called up and stepping into a rotational role.
Yep.
Great question, Angelo. I appreciate it. But yeah, we overrate our own UDFAs for sure. Zach Serpa Weinberg, I think I have that right. Maybe pronouncing his last name wrong, says, other than being drafted / in year two, what have you seen from Kane to put him ahead of Lowry for the third safety? Best I can tell, Kane's camp has been akin to a fourth liner in hockey. Doesn't make much happen for you, but also doesn't let too much happen for the other team. You know, apt analogy. That's really fair, Zach. I think Kane has, frankly, been not the most obviously instinctive safety in camp, but then he still made some plays. And I can't take that away from him. And I'm a hockey fan, probably not to the level that you are, but I've always appreciated that the Caps' fourth line has been one that they could shut down some opponents' one line sometimes. I'm not even 100% sure that Kane would get the nod over Lowry if 3 to 5 games into the season, they needed one of them to take over a split field back end role. For whatever reason, if they wanted to move Hamilton up and have, you know, Lowry or Kane play a bigger role in the back end, I'm not even sure Kane would be the guy. But right now, he's moved himself ahead of both Lowry and Braid. He's more like he's moved parallel with Lowry. He's moved up while Lowry's also moved up while Braid has kind of stood still. And I think, you know, Braid still is a pretty decent football player, but I just don't think he's kept up with either of the other two.
Oh yeah.
All right. Great stuff, guys. Let's move back, talk MVPs now for a little bit, and then we'll call it a night here. Jake, I know you got an early morning here. Who's your number three guy?
My number three is probably, I'm going to go with Malik Ham. I was kind of between a couple players, but he just had a really solid game. I was impressed with both his pass rush, his edge contain, and the incredible interception / fumble recovery in the air. He was just really solid throughout the game. Tackle for a loss. Contain on the edge, like I mentioned. Shedding, you know, doing the whole Sam linebacker thing. Like, he definitely, out of our outside linebackers on the roster right now, maybe Mike Green will get there and be a really good Sam. I know he's interested in growing in that role, but Malik Ham shows that ability to, you know, play through the tight end. I think he has the athleticism to move in coverage, and then also to beat tackles, in a continued pass rush and edge contain. I liked his game in this one. I thought it was a really solid effort. More impressive than what David Ajabo did, and not to compare the guys with differing playing time. I just thought that he looked really sharp.
So my recollection is that Ham only had one coverage snap in this game, which is a little surprising. Having trouble finding it, but I thought he had one coverage snap on defense during the entire game. But that said, the play you mentioned makes up for a lot of that, that he has such good skills that he can pick the ball out of the air like that.
Yeah.
Actually, Malik Ham had four coverage snaps as it was in this game. So anyway, Huh. Well, this is interesting. I'm looking at PFF's total here. They recalibrated and they gave Malik Ham the 52-yard play.
They credit it on him?
Yeah, they charged him with it. And that, and they had him rated a lot higher. I'm seeing this earlier, and now they've got him further down. I thought that was Buchanan's ball, but that's okay. So anyway, it is what it is. But Ham, I thought, still had a good game. And whenever you work with PFF, their targets are very harsh on linebackers and easy on safeties, because level two, level three throws between those two levels almost always get charged the underneath player. And you'll see big differences in target numbers, and safeties usually look a lot better by PFF's target assignment methodology.
All right. Yeah, I mean, the assignment of that play to Ham doesn't really turn me off Ham personally. No. I don't expect an outside linebacker that's primarily an edge rusher to carry downfield with an athletic tight end consistently. Like, that's not what this guy is being asked to do. Like, if he's covering the flats, that's one thing, but for him to like run, you know, vertical seam routes with a tight end, that's completely different.
All right, I got to take another look at that play now, but I'll go to my number three guy. That's JAD, and JAD gets it in this game for the combination of the two drives that he shut down to start the game. But he's completely changed my mind on him. And you know, I try not to be wedded to any position I have about football. I think anyone's probably at risk of doing that. But if you're particularly stubborn and you're not really trying to incorporate new evidence as it comes into play, you're missing an opportunity to change your mind. It doesn't make you wrong about the player. It makes you right about the player this time. So in the case of JAD, he's a totally different player than he was this first three seasons. He's healthy. He's finding the football in the air. He's coming back to the quarterback to make plays on the ball. In this case, he picked off a ball, but he's had passes defensed as well in this preseason. He's a much different player.
I agree. And JAD and Malik Ham were neck and neck for me. I just went with a different guy. So we had somebody else to talk about as well.
Good.
My second guy is Trenton Simpson. He had a fantastic game. Didn't play the whole game, which is good, because he's going to be a starter in their, you know, base packages and their nickel alongside Roquan Smith. But I mean, what he did to tip the ball near the line of scrimmage, to have that awareness of the passing lane while he's there near the quarterback, to put his hand up and tip that thing up for JAD to make a smart play to come get that ball was great. His pursuit on the forced fumble interception recovery by Malik Ham, we've talked about a million times already, was really good. Nice to see. We need more of those. The Ravens need to force more fumbles. When the players get there, just like Ojabo in the previous game where he had the unblocked sack, like if you get to Anthony Richardson and he doesn't even see you coming, I want to see a hand at least punch at that ball. Like, you're getting there. You made a fantastic hit. Nothing wrong with it. Clean. Mm-hmm. Great. You have the chance. He doesn't even know what's happening. You have the chance to knock that ball out and give the ball to your defense. Like, you can make an even better play. I want to see more forced fumbles and fumble recoveries, because in my opinion, that is the best defensive play you can make, is a forced fumble recovered for a touchdown is the greatest defensive play you can possibly make over interceptions, because it takes more things for an interception to happen.
Yep.
So
got personally, Ed Reed in Washington in 2004 had one of those on Mark Brunell. That turned the game around, and that's it's some great stuff when it happens. Trent Simpson, also my number two guy. I don't think we need to discuss a lot more about him.
Oh yeah,
I do still think I'm not 100% sure that he's the right guy to have on the field on third down. Mm-hmm. But you know, if I could get comfortable after a fashion with the quality of play that the Ravens got at the weak side spot, even forget his lousy play at Mike, but at the weak side spot from Patrick Queen, then I think I'm going to be comfortable this year from Trenton Simpson. I think he's a much more physical player than Queen. I think he'll be a better tackler, even though he missed a tackle, obviously, in this game. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be He has a lot of the quickness that Queen had and can be a good pass rusher. And I think he can just be probably also be more impactful in coverage than Queen was, which is not a really high bar. Queen's, right, you know, drop off after leaving the Ravens should tell you a lot about how much Trenton can possibly benefit from playing next to Roquan too. So I think this year he's finally ready to do it. The guy looks jacked. He looks a lot bigger than he was last year. Roquan has already talked about the two of them, Buchanan and him, looking like Greek gods as compared to him.
it's pretty funny because Roquan's such a good player, but he just doesn't have the physique. Physique that those guys do. He's like, I guess I'll focus on ball and study the game, but he's more of an average looking athlete out there.
Yeah. All right. You want to talk about Keon Martin first? Because I assume he's your number one.
He is my number one. Man, we talked about him a lot already in this game, but just a fantastic effort. Tackle for a loss before the Trenton Simpson interception. I mean, the JAD pick.
I don't think, just to stop you, I don't think we need to go over the individual plays again because we've kind of done this. But is there one thing about Keon Martin that stood out that you don't think you knew about him before or you weren't sure about before that maybe became new in this game?
I think it just kind of solidified for me his willingness to be kind of a hard-hitting player for his size to really get in there. It solidified in this game. And then that interception, it was zone. I mean, he was already looking at the quarterback, but it kind of gives you the same vibes as when players have that wherewithal, like Marlon Humphrey did this past season, to come off their own man and identify where the ball is going ahead of time and, you know, dart and make a play. I think that is there for him. I think he has that kind of ability and, you know, that kind of, you know, gave me some thoughts of pretty impressive DBs.
Okay, you took both of my answers away. I thought I'll have one of these because you'll only say one. But the instincts thing, highly portable, but in the slot, very important because there's a lot of tip ball action that happens around the slot and knowing where the ball is, how to get to it. JAD showed it off in this game, but the off-man skills.
Yeah.
It's good for tackling. It's good for coverage. It's most valuable when you're a little bit down the field, and you can make a play on somebody else's man when the routes are kind of close together, but boy, it's useful then. And the other thing is just the lack of fear of contact. We saw him make two straight plays in that Dallas game. I wonder if like his confidence meter had grown on each of those plays and all of a sudden he thinks he's Superman out there, which is probably good in the balance of things. I don't want him to, you know, play like a man possessed, so he's certain to get hurt the way I felt like Tavon did a lot of the time.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's really nice to have a physical slot corner.
Oh yeah, for sure. I would echo that with Ardarius last year. I mean, the hits that Ardarius Washington was making in multiple games where he would stop, you know, against the Steelers, Russell Wilson running towards the end zone. Just boom, stopped him. I think the Steelers had to settle for a field goal.
There was a fumble that Russell Wilson had at the 4-yard line in one of the games.
It might have been a fumble. I'm trying to remember which game it was, what play. But yeah, Ardarius was, you know, he was putting the hit stick on some guys, and he's a small player.
Yeah. All right, Jake. Always a pleasure talking football with you. Great stuff. And we really had the fun side of the ball to talk defense in this one, as has been the case of a lot of the preseason so far. Tell people again where they can talk football with you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter or X as they call it, at Real Jake Vogel, V-O-G-E-L. And I love to talk football of all kinds. Ravens and Georgia are my two go-tos, but any college football and any NFL as well as the NFL draft. I really love doing that.
So. We always have Jake on for a good portion of the NFL draft on the show here. And he's one of the major contributors / co-hosts of the show. And I really appreciated your effort on the last few years, Jake. other folks out there, hit me up if you want to do one of the concern series. I'll mention that again. If you have questions, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag. Like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. And please pass this show along to the friend you think would enjoy it most. That's always word of mouth is our best way to grow. Jake, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.